with the pussy. Nothing wrong with the pussy. Nothing wrong with the pussy.
All right, welcome back to Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's Julian. We're back for a solo episode, and before we go anywhere, I haven't plugged the phone number in a very long time, and it's my fault. Obviously, I've been neglecting one of my favorite parts of this show, which is the voicemails where I give you amazing advice and intrusive thoughts. And to get in contact with me, call 877-557-SWWP. That's 877-557-SWWP to get in contact with me, your intrusive thought therapist. I found out how to get back into my account. Now I can go through voicemails again. And yes, I'm excited to hear from all of you. It's been quite a few episodes since I've taken a voicemail, and that is on me. Now let's get on to the show. This weekend, I had an incredible weekend. This weekend, it was officially the first weekend where I felt like summer. I met with a friend of mine Saturday afternoon, early afternoon, around 11 o'clock to get a brunch. Had some grilled halloumi and, you know, some hummus and hubs and all these beautiful, you know, Mediterranean, beautiful spread. We sat outside. It was like about 80, 85 degrees, a little hot, but we were shaded. It's a very nice situation. A couple friends walked by, small talk, very New York afternoon. And I thought after that lunch, I would end up back in my apartment, or at least back in Manhattan at some point during the day. That was, in fact, not the case. Ended up wandering, meeting up with more friends, putting our name down at a restaurant in Brooklyn, which was for 5 hours later. So we wandered around, hit different cocktail spots, went to my friend's apartment, hung out, cooled off for a bit, had another drink or two there, and then went to dinner. And then from dinner back to my friend's apartment. And then, you know, we all kind of agreed to call it a night. Point is, I left my apartment at 11 a.m. via getting picked up here in the neighborhood that I live in. Ended up in Brooklyn. And then I city biked back home at 2:30 in the morning. I was outside full, you know, 12, 11 hour day. And it was beautiful. I had a pretty amazing city bike ride home, feeling a little, you know, loose, goosey. But point is, I was at that point, it was heat exhaustion. I was just cooked, got in bed, crashed immediately. And because most of my, like, you know, drinking and consumption was during the day, woke up, no hangover, which is prime. Went to the gym, went to the park, got some shots up today, watched some of the playoff game, and now, you know, we're hanging, which is beautiful. That's my ideal summer package. I think the older you get, the more you look for the day hang. When I was younger, I could sleep all day, sleep through a Saturday, wake up for dinner, and then go into a night knowing I would be out till like 4 or 5 a.m. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm in my 30s. My ideal day, especially a Saturday, a beautiful summer Saturday in New York, you wake up early. If you're feeling it, go break a sweat, get a run. I don't run, but get a bike ride in, get a lift in, maybe get some shots up, play a little pickup. There you go. You got your physical betterment part of the day done. Now you can just enjoy the day. Go get a lunch. Go get a pickup or a mid-afternoon spritz. And then just have a day. Enjoy the sun through sundown, have a chill dinner, and then go home. You know, I'm not chasing anybody out all night. I'm not trying to pick up anybody at a bar or a club. I'm done with all that shit. Catch me with my good friends, breaking bread, talking shit, making fun of each other, and then in bed before 11. I mean, it is that, to name a better ideal summer situation. I haven't touched the water yet in this summer, but, you know, salt life is approaching, and I'm about that life, and I will be back in the Hamptons out east. I found out my friend rented that the same home again he had last year, and I'm sure I'll make other trips around there as well. If we're staying local, I do want to just congratulate myself and the greater New York Knicks community for believing in us. One of the few... It took people from New York to believe in New York sports. I saw a graphic of the ESPN analysts. All 11 picked the Celtics in either five, six, or seven games. And then I looked at, you know, on the other side of the bracket, all the analysts picked the Cavs to beat the Pacers. So all the professionals are 0 for 22. They put up a fat goose egg combined between these two playoff series. And why not us, man? I think that the Indiana Pacers are a great matchup. They're long. They're taller. Pause all that, whatever. And it's going to be a tough out for us, but I'm very excited that we have home court advantage, Eastern Conference Finals home court advantage. You know, it's a rare occasion that we can experience this, and I'm super excited. I will try my best to get tickets to be in that building for one of those games or any of these games during this series, because this is we're witnessing history. I was outside watching the game. It's so funny because it wasn't a sanctioned event. It was just a street that was commandeered because this coffee shop had a very large flat screen in the window facing out into the street. This is unlike the Lower East Side over on Orchard and I don't remember the cross street. Doesn't matter. But it's like, you know, a little half block right off Allen Street. And there was just, you know, about 100 or so people started to be on the curb, but then, you know, pile into the road, whatever. Cops wanted to shut it down. They saw what we were doing. They're like, all right, we're not going to shut it down, but we're going to, like, you know, keep things together. You know, everybody, we're not at a bar. There's no alcohol being served legally. So people are just hitting the bodegas around by, grabbing, you know, 6-packs, 12-packs of Modelo's, whatever. It's so New York. I went with a friend and grabbed some pizza, came back with a pizza box for some homies. Like, it was so just beautiful and community-based. And obviously the game itself was just an absolute beatdown. So it was just fun to just enjoy just like a pure ass beating, which the Celtics were long overdue for. And I'm happy we were the providers of it. It was exciting. My phone was blowing up in the best way possible. And that was just a great way to really kick off the summer, honestly, and heading into this next series. I'm very excited. Nervous about this one, but I think we can get it done. I don't think the Pacers are not an easy out, certainly not for our team. We have a tough matchup against them. Other things that happened in New York over the weekend. This Mexican boat, I thought it was a joke when I was first reading the stories about it. Catching up to speed now, Mexican Navy tall ship smashes into Brooklyn Bridge, shears off masts after losing power, 2 dead, 17 hurt. When I first saw the video, I saw one angle from it coming through the underneath the Brooklyn Bridge, so I didn't see the real damage, which was on the other side, because you could see the actual masts collapse. And then you get even more angles, because everything's on film these days, and you see that there are people, like I don't know if they're naval officers or dancers or whatever, but they're seated and positioned all across all these insanely large masts that just, you know, are jetting out from the boat itself. So people were, you know, getting knocked off the mast and tumbling and falling into the river, and obviously, I mean, a couple of them didn't make it, which is tragic. But I don't understand how something like this can happen, because if you just look at the stills of this, if you just look at the photos, it's like a child wouldn't even attempt to run a boat this tall under a bridge that clearly it's not even like maybe we'll clear it. It's not even close to being the right height to clear this bridge, which makes you think, how did this get sanctioned? Like, how is this pushed up the, you know, this is another thing that Trump can blame Mexicans about and just, you know, continue that loving feud that he has with them. Are they going to pay for the damages of the bridge? Are we going to turn the bridge into a wall? Who knows? This is a really confusing story. It is insane how many angles there are of this. The sounds aren't great. I just don't get why. What was this boat, by the way? Like, what was the, I don't understand what the whole point of it was. Let's read here. The Majestic, not even going to try to pronounce that name, which has a crew of 277 people, mostly cadets, apparently lost power and was sailing out of New York on its way to Iceland. You know, Iceland, where all the Mexicans go. And was current and was carried into a rock deck of the bridge around 8:30 p.m., according to Mayor Gasconia. The collision sheared off the ship's 147-foot masts. 147 feet these damn things were, with alarming footage capturing numerous crew members were dangling for their lives from the sails and boomed after the boat hit the bridge, which has a max clearance of 135 feet. The bridge's clearance is 135 feet. The masts are 147 feet. You're looking at 12 feet. You can see the top of the mast from the, if you're a car driving, imagine being on the bridge and seeing that view, like, holy shit, what is about to slam into me? And the bridge did what a bridge does and held its own and snapped the mast. But there are these just masts just sticking 12 feet up beyond the actual clearance of the bridge itself, which is insane. I will say what is impressive about this crash is the masts themselves were all had string lights, and it was all covered in lights. None of the light, they flickered, understandable, but the lights remained on, which reminded me of there has to be a big scam or a big scheme with Christmas tree lighting in Big Christmas Tree Corporation, because this boat slammed into a concrete and steel built bridge, snapped both masts, and people are flying off, and the power, all we get from the light source itself is a flicker. Meanwhile, if you drop a bulb while lighting a Christmas tree, what's the classic saying? When one light goes out, they all go out. You can't keep a Christmas tree lit for longer than a week without the whole damn thing going out. Meanwhile, this boat just slams into the side of the Brooklyn Bridge, and we get maybe two or three flickers before they all come cut back on. So that I just want to put that out there as my initial observation, and I'm just surprised about how resilient those lights were. Pretty crazy stuff, guys. In less lighter news, the biggest point of news over the course of last week, certainly within the world of hip hop, is the Diddy trial, and in particular Cassie's testimony. Now, I don't want to get too much into the testimony itself. I think, you know, Cassie is a fucking hero and a saint for going up there and being that vulnerable and knowing. I'm sure, I would imagine for her, this is like her official, I don't think this will ever end, the turmoil and the trauma and the hurt that she went through while with Diddy. But I would imagine, as someone that's deeply into my therapy now, when you're harnessing that much hate, when you're harnessing that much hurt and pain, and you've only confided to those that you love, although this is in itself a very public occurrence, unfortunately for her, I'm sure she'd rather not have it be this case, but it is. And you see incidences where her now husband, I believe his name is Alex. Yeah, Alex ran like a 50 miles super marathon for domestic violence victims, and you're seeing, you know, other just you're seeing glimpses of her life and how people that love her and care for her are doing things that let them know that they're there for her, because I'm sure they have. Honestly, I'm sure a lot of the testimony that she said on that stand, Alex wasn't, he was aware obviously of the pain and certain things she went through, but to the extent in the details in which she shared on the stand, I'm sure that was news to him and her loved ones as well. So you're not only, you know, reliving and recounting these times, but also you're telling a version of it that you've never explicitly said out loud, because you have to, because this is, unfortunately, like, this is bigger than you. This is about taking down someone who is long past due for this moment to happen. But you understand that every painstaking detail that you provide is one step further for what justice should bring to the situation. So that being said, one of the things that Cassie shared, and this is quite explicit, I'm sorry if you're eating breakfast right now, it has been revealed in court that Diddy would allegedly request to have a sex worker ejaculate onto Cassie and then have her rub the semen on his nipples in the next room. Let's break that down like this is a sports science, ESPN. So imagine this. You have convinced your girl to, not convinced, you're forcing your girl to just get absolutely ran through by sex workers. Clearly, we don't even need to address that. As if that wasn't enough, Diddy's level of control was so painstakingly detailed that he would then have her collect the nut, the ejaculate, said more eloquently in the document itself, and have her transport it to another room. I imagine if this is a Diddy freak-off, we're not looking at rooms that are sharing walls. You're probably having to like go to a different wing and transport this like a fucking delivery driver. And you're going through the home with all this nut in your hands, and then you're rubbing it, not just rubbing it on him, you have to hit the right spots, explicitly on his nipples, specifically on his nipples. I mean, this man is a sick fuck. Let's continue. Did he also request for Cassie to lay in a pool full of baby oil? Makes sense. That's why he had such a heavy supply. Cassie also claims she didn't want to tell Diddy to end the freak off parties out of fear that he would do it with other women instead. I think that's the nastiness aside of what I shared a couple seconds ago about the nut and the rubbing and the nipples. This is what I was referring to when you're seeing Cassie having to relive these. You're not just reliving the tragedies or the moments at themselves. You're also reliving why you may have been what the public would deem as complicit and why you would play along. And obviously a lot of that's fear-based, but it's also for the sake of there's no great way to say it, but it's like, I can do this. I've done this. I'm built for this, so to speak. And I would hate to see someone else have to go through this. So Lord knows if I'm not capable of doing this, he'll just find someone else to do it. And then he'll continue to just break other women and continue this awful cycle, which Cassie seemingly in this statement is saying, I got it. I'll just be the person that, you know, becomes the fall here. And because I can handle all this shit that I wouldn't want anybody else to go through. There's more and more, obviously, about the testimony in the trial itself. But I did want to draw attention to Alex Fine, who is Cassie's husband, who has been obviously very quiet throughout this whole process and waited, I think, appropriately until she spoke to address the situation. And here's his statement. Alex Fine made a great statement via Cassie's lawyer about the narratives online and how he must have felt sitting there listening to her testimony and how he saved her. He said it's an insult to the years of painful work she did to say that he saved her. So here's his statement. Over the past 5 days, the world has gotten to witness the strength and bravery of my wife, freeing herself of the past. And I agree. I think there really is a lot of truth to freeing yourself in terms of it sucks. But when you live it, when you say it and it's documented, it becomes a release rather than harnessing a lot of this stuff in. There has been speculation online surrounding how it must feel for me to sit there and listen to my wife's testimony. Plenty of memes, all the jokes, we've seen them all. I have felt so many things sitting there. I have felt tremendous pride and overwhelming love for Cass. I have felt profound anger that she may have been subjected to sitting in front of a person who tried to break her. So to him and all those who helped him along the way, please know this. You did not. You did not break her spirit nor her smile that lights up every room. You did not break the soul of a mother who gives the best hugs and plays the silliest games with our little girls. You did not break the woman who had made me a better man, he said. And continuing. I did not save Cassie, as some of you have said. To say that is an insult for the years of painful work my wife has done to save herself. Cassie saved Cassie. She alone broke free from abuse, coercion, violence, and threats. She did all the work of fighting the demons that only a demon himself could have done to her. All I have done over this is love her and support her. Her life is now surrounded by love, et cetera, et cetera. This horrific chapter forever put behind us, but basically saying Cassie's the real hero here. She did all the work herself. I've done nothing but support her throughout these years. And now that this is finally out, we as a family, we can move on and just become parents and love our children together, which I really do think is beautiful. I think that both Cassie and Alex, I know nothing about her husband, Alex, are handling this with the utmost class and respect to them as a couple. And it's still fuck Diddy. It's always been fuck Diddy. I saw videos of the paid actors, maybe not even actors, just people that wanted $20 being paid to stand outside the courtroom with free Diddy shirts, you know, as if there's a media push for Diddy's, you know, as if people are really calling for him to be freed. Anybody will do anything for $20 these days, seemingly. So do not fall for these bullshit narratives that are being spun. People do not care for Diddy, nor should they. And it's big fuck to him. Staying on big fucks, Tory Lanez was stabbed, I believe, 14 or 17 times while locked up. And I believe that they said it was a Mexican group. Maybe it was those guys on the boat fleeing New York. They were heading to Iceland, so they didn't get caught. Jurisdiction. But yeah, it's actually amazing that he is alive Again, I don't know. It's a jail weapon, so it's probably not, you know, a knife, but whatever, some sort of shiv that they were able to devise. 14 times he was stabbed. Oh, Jesus Christ. So the man that stabbed him, I'm reading here, Cassio is his name, is serving a life sentence for, allegedly, I mean, he's serving it, so it's probably true, for murdering his 13-year-old girlfriend with a shotgun when he was 20. So yeah, this guy clearly has nothing to lose. Also could be a huge Megan Thee Stallion fan. So I don't really wish death upon many people. Those that I do, I think it's a universal wishing upon of death. So Tory is not one of those people. I don't wish ill or death on Tory. I mean, you're in prison. This is a part of that life, that culture. And this is awful. It sucks. You survived. So you live to see, at least, you know, you're alive. That's all you can really ask for. I see that, Drake shared a petition to pardon Tory. He's urging Governor Newsom to correct a deep injustice. That's what the petition says, which looks like it currently, when this screenshot was taken, has over 175,000 signatures. So Drake is also being very vocal and an advocate for Tory's freedom as well. We'll see what goes on there. Am I monitoring this case closely? Not really, but I do think it is something that obviously is relevant. And again, not to the extent of the trauma that Cassie went through, but I'm sure Megan is over this. That girl just wants to move on and have a life and have a career outside of this nonsense. So every time something happens, what sucks is her life is seemingly forever tethered to this guy and everything that happens to him, even though, you know, a stabbing in a prison had nothing to do with her. Her name's always going to get brought up, and she's always going to have to continuously relive this bullshit that she didn't sign up for. So that's a really, really, really unfortunate for her. And I feel for her for that. Speaking of not speaking of anything, I don't have a transition, but I do want to say, can we just, how much stuff needs to happen politically for us to just acknowledge how much of a grift Trump is on right now? I haven't gotten political in a while, so let me have my time on this one, please. Trump, and this is really what sent me over the edge, it's the Qatar plane. And not only is it the gift itself, but it's Trump's plan to use this gift as the replacement for Air Force One while it's under repair. And for those that don't know, Air Force One is the private plane that the president exclusively flies on. There's a Marine One and other crafts and carriers that are used for different officials, but the Air Force One's the big guy, the president's plane. And this airplane, there's actually a lot of cool information about it online and in, like, through docuseries and stuff as well. It's painstakingly, like, taken apart, reconstructed, and updated all the time. They're always working on it because obviously it's a big deal anytime the president's 30,000 feet in the air. It's a huge deal. And the Air Force One is currently under not a regular maintenance repair, but under like a real repair, because these aren't planes that they just replace and buy every year. It's not like that. When you have a plane of that stature, of those qualifications, you tend to hold on to them and just keep them up to speed, up to spec. But, you know, sometimes you just got to, you know, when you buy a nice watch, sometimes you just got to take it in and give it the time you need. So right now that's currently going on with the sanctioned Air Force One, the one that the government, the FBI, everyone approves is the appropriate flight carrier. So now we talk about the Qatar plane is a gift from Qatar. Qatar, a country that seemingly has a love for Trump, but also has very bad ties with some regional bullies that America and most people in America don't align with. And in accepting this gift, this has turned a lot of people's heads, even within Trump's own cabinet, even with Republican members. Point is, the airplane is a cargo jet, a luxury plane. They say it's the most luxurious plane ever. It has some, like, you know, nine or so bathrooms on it. It's just, It's a Boeing 747-8. It's about the size of a fucking small country. This thing is over $400 million. It is a beast of a plane. It is gorgeous. I mean, it's a beautiful aircraft. But point is, not every gift is worth taking. I think that's the lesson here. Trump, in a, you know, in full Trump mode, can't turn down luxury, certainly not to that extent, and accepted the gifts with open arms, which in itself would be controversial enough. But he also wants to use it to replace Air Force One while they're doing the maintenance on it, which is legit just not possible, because this plane has to get stripped down to every nut and bolt and approved by the board for it to be safe for the president of the United States to fly on and to use regularly for travel. That process isn't fast. That process takes years for it to get a aircraft or any vehicle approved for the president. And they were saying that allegedly that the process takes so long that by the time it would be approved, Trump would already be long gone out of office. Like, this isn't something that can happen. Thanks for the gift. Next week, we're taking this to the fucking, you know, we're going across the country in it. That's not how this works. Which has been frustrating for Trump, because he really wants to make this his plane. And then he said he also plans on putting this in his presidential museum once he's done. So not only does he want to spend a lot of government funds and government workers' time working on this one specific project, he also wants to then take it off the market. Say they go through with this process and it is approved as a plane that the president can fly on. He then wants to just take it off the market, available to any other president, and be like, no, this was just me. It was a gift for me, not for America. It wasn't a gift for the White House in the office of the presidency. This is a gift for Donald J. Trump. So therefore, we're just going to keep it at my museum, which I would, where do you even house this thing? You would just have a hangar just for this thing, which I guess is what it would look like, a Call of Duty map just sitting in a warehouse for fucking years collecting dust. So they said to do the process Trump wants to do, it would take about $1 billion to get done. And like I said earlier, the timing just wouldn't align up with his presidency. Even who's to say, even if he wins that third magical third term, he keeps soft pitching. Which I think a lot of people are ignoring and kind of passing it off as, oh, Trump, it's going to become a thing. He's going to find a way to run again. Mark my words. I'll fucking say, post this when it becomes a thing. This plane just is not, it's insane. Mike Pence has come out and said it's a bad idea for Trump to accept the jet. So now we're seeing the attack from, not attack, the anger across the aisle from Republicans and Democrats alike. Some that are outraged that he took a gift from Qatar because of the political affiliations there, and others saying that, you know, it's just irresponsible and fiscally irresponsible, especially for someone that's trying to do government efficiency, to waste billions of dollars to retrofit this plane for the president. It makes zero sense. So that is grift number one. Clearly, that's just straight up basically like accepting $500,000 in cash in gifts. Let's just say that. Then we could talk about the meme coin. Trump's meme coin, which is, I mean, just the term meme coin in itself is a sham. So obviously Trump wants in on the scheme. So Trump launches this meme coin. I believe it was like 58 or so of them. He boosts, fucking pumps it, gets, you know, all these right wing pundits and just, you know, basically just creates like a way for donors to just dump money into his pockets. Raises millions of dollars, and then they also get an exclusive dinner with President Trump, like a group dinner. I don't know if they're individual dinners. I doubt it, because you're not going to take 58 individual dinners, but they get like a private dinner with Trump. So you're this is the direct definition of buying your way into the White House, buying your way into Trump's ear, basically. And I'm not saying this isn't something that was exclusive, that wasn't available in the past. Obviously, we've seen great donors from both Republican and Democratic parties that spend, you know, a lot of money, and they have very specific things that they want done on their behalf, or a law passed that would be in their favor if they're like, you know, a manufacturing company, etc., or a tech company. But this is just the most like blatant and explicit way to just say, yo, you want to have dinner with me? It's like, pay a $20 million, pay up. So now there's the meme coin, which is just complete bullshit, and no one's taking that seriously except the people that have the coin and just want to meet him and talk to him and get in his ear. And then we're seeing, there's also, this happened when he signed, Melania has a $40 million deal with Amazon on a doc that's about her returning to the White House as the first lady. This is about, I believe, double or triple the offer of any Amazon doc before. And I guess there were reports that shortly before this offer was made, Trump and Melania had dinner with Bezos and his bitch. And they basically just like inked the deal there. So there we go. So in total, Trump's over, I think his personal and family net worth is well over into the billions since becoming president again. And I mean, that just kind of that's kind of spitting in the face of what being an elected official is. We had Pete Buttigieg on the old show. I set that up. A good friend of mine reached out to me, and she was working with Pete at the time, and she wanted to make it happen. I said, I'd love to make it happen. She was a fan of the show, got Pete in, sat with him. It was very quick, 10 minutes, and he was gone. But he was an amazing guy, really had a great conversation with him off camera. And then he went on recently, and I love that he's going out there because Pete is a genius. And he went on Flagrant, which was awesome. I really like that episode with them. If you want to check that out, it's fantastic. And Pete was saying he was telling us, but he also said this on the Flagrant one. When he was in office, he didn't take first class flights or business upgrades when he's on a flight. He said, you know, I have a responsibility to put my constituents and the people that I serve before me. And that's just, I'm not saying this is to just big up Pete, but that's by nature what a politician should do. You should always put the people in which you serve in the community at large ahead of your own personal gain or interest. It doesn't take much digging to just understand that that's just not how Trump navigates. And I'm not even honestly like policy, politics aside, his messy business practices in the past. I'm not excusing all that stuff, but I can even look past it. Just look at what he's done in this presidency in terms of things that he's done that solely benefit him and his family. And look, that's the American way. I mean, get it out the mud. Like you want to do things that increase your legacy, increase your family net worth, and make sure you guys, you know, live forever. You fucking Genghis Khan and this bitch. But that's acceptable for like your shady, shitty billionaire. That's just not involved with politics outside of donating money and, you know, fudging things on the back end. No one that is the face of the country that has the football in hand should be able to do what Trump is doing. And it's really like abhorrent of the whole process. And it's fucking disgusting. But we've accepted it, and so many people, I'd say, are turning a blind eye. But even if they're not turning a blind eye, there's nothing they can do. And he's just running this ship like the Mexicans, slamming it into a wall or a bridge over and over and over again. And we're waiting for the mast, to carry on with this analogy, to break. And it just, no matter how many lights go down, no matter how many people are getting thrown off overboard, no matter how many people get killed along the way, nothing matters besides what he gains from it. And that's really sad. And we're all feeling that down to our personal finances and trying to save money and not being able to afford groceries. And like these decisions that he's making that are increasing his net worth by tenfold are hurting us, just, you know, an average working American domestically. Which is really sad, because it shouldn't have to be that way. And yet it is. So anyway, that's it. Trump's a grifter. I just wanted to put that out there. I did want to say, in terms of getting new things, I'm not an avid shopper. I don't really buy shit for myself. But I did take this time this weekend. Actually earlier today, this afternoon, which is crazy how fast stuff gets delivered these days, because I'm expecting it all tomorrow. I did say, I believe an episode or two ago, that when I'm not moving, I was going to commit to updating a couple pieces in my apartment. First, the coffee table, rug, and my couch. I am proud to say I found an amazing coffee table and a great rug that should be delivered tomorrow, which is pretty exciting. I really think it's going to bring a lot of new life into my apartment. If anybody has any suggestions on couches or knows somebody in the couch company, I'd love to do an influencer collab on that. I would love to take a couch to do a post for. I really want to get a new couch. That's the thing I'm most particular on. I always knew the coffee table I wanted. The rug was never really an issue. But the couch itself is something I'm being super particular on. And I'll know it's right when I see it. I don't even need to like lay on it or experience it in person. I just need to, I'll know what I want when I see it. So I'm waiting for that to connect, because it's been in my mind for quite a while to update this couch. And I just haven't gotten around to it. So we're going to take the time this summer, hopefully in best case. I mean, this month would be nice to do before June, but certainly in June, I would like to get this over with and get a new couch in here. You feel me? All right, guys, I promised I would have one, and here we are. We already got one. Let's get into a voicemail. And before I play the voicemail, remember to call this number, 877-557-SWWP, to get in contact with me, your intrusive thought therapist. Now let's get into the voicemail.
What you're doing is Julian is your main Tang, also known as Povated Tangerine King, a.k.a. Dinosaur McGruffy. And I'm just calling because I've been having a hard time at work. Sometimes it's hard being the only black person like within a 50-mile radius. And sometimes I feel like I'm being, well, I don't pull the race car, but sometimes I just feel like I'm just being outcast. And I don't know if it's me or is it them or is it just a figment of my imagination. Please give me a phone call back.
We're going to stop that because I don't want to play his phone number. Okay, we have the classic, I'm the only black man in my work life experience. And it's difficult. And I feel that. It's funny. I was talking to my therapist about this. By the way, therapy is going incredible. I'm obsessed. It's way too, it's something I should have done a long time ago, but I'm way too into it. It's consuming my personality. It's like the way in which people that become vegan only talk about being, oh, I'm vegan. It's like, I'm that with therapy. I'm like, well, my therapist and I were talking about, like, I could just say what I was saying without having to preface it with my therapist and I, but that's just who I am. Let me have it. I'm having a fucking moment. It's been a great fucking go. So give me some space to vent about that. Anyway, gentlemen, where's this guy from? I'm not going to say where, but let me look up this area code. Okay. I could say where. He's from Virginia. Central Virginia. South Central Virginia. Yeah, it's pretty white down there. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I mean, bro, Lynchburg is one of the cities. I always say, you hear a name like Lynchburg, this is the dark history of America. How do you think Lynchburg got its name? You think Lynchburg got its name? This is my analysis. I think a city like Lynchburg got its name because they have really strong trees that used to do a lot of heavy lifting back in the day off those plantations. You know what I mean? That's what I feel about Lynchburg, Virginia. You know, I feel like we should rename that place. But dude, I feel you. I spent this weekend with a group of friends that are predominantly white, and I always have that moment where I look up, and they're great people. I love my friends. They're awesome. I'm not faulting them for being white. But then I always have that moment of like, damn, I'm that guy. Like, I'm that guy in the Disney movie. I'm like Troy Bolton's best friend that's always holding the basketball. You know, I've been that guy in certain circles. And it's a little different at work. Also, it's like, what are you trying to get out of work? It's work. You know, are you trying to become friends with people? How much do you want them to know who you actually are? I'm sure what you're telling me is you're code switching at work, which is what a lot of us have to do on a daily basis. And I mean, it kind of just comes with the territory of being black in a predominantly, I mean, the work world is predominantly white. So this situation you're in, unfortunately, is not uncommon. And it's something I've experienced. Well, not so much, a little bit. And not really. I don't need to get into that. But it's something that no matter how it manifests, whether it be at work, personal life, et cetera, like you always have to play a version of yourself. At least I always feel like I have to. And I don't think you should let that discourage you from your actual work and your job. And it's like, what do you want to get out of these people? Do you want them to be friends? Like, do you want them to like bust down a bucket of chicken with you? Like, what's the goal here with your work colleagues? How much do you actually care to get to know them? Is this a matter of, or is this a soft version of you saying, hey, I actually need to move out of here because I'm realizing, I mean, you said you have 50-mile radius. There's no black people. That doesn't sound like a work problem. That sounds like a Lynchburg, Virginia problem, bro. Maybe you just need to move. Go a little further down state. Go into Arlington. You could touch Arlington. You could go, go into the Chocolate City. Go into D.C. Go into the heart of the city. That could be a good move. It sounds like it's less about work and more about your totality of your environment. Cast a wider net. Maybe there are black people over there. Maybe there's not the type you vibe with. I don't fucking know, man. But you said, I don't know if it's me or if it's a figment of my imagination. Could be both. But it also could just be worth exploring. Go spend time in other cities. Go see, you know, if this is more your speed. If you go to a bar and you see it's like a mixed crowd. I love walking into a bar and seeing a you know, different pockets of people. Not just like isolated either. Like all, you know, mixing together and just like a large, diverse friend groups always puts a smile on my face. I hate like a homogenous bar where it's just like, this is the country bar. It's all white people. It's like, this is the cocktail bar that plays rap. Here goes the blacks place. Like, this is a spot that does this. Here goes all the Asians. It's like, why is that? Everything is so siloed. You can even find that in New York. It can be like that. So don't let the city make you someone you're not, and don't let work make you someone you're not. Go out there, find the community, and if this is a prompt for you to move, then so be it. Go look elsewhere. I'm looking for a new couch. Finding a new city to live in is much more difficult, but it takes time. And give it the time it takes, because you're worth it. You deserve it. So I'm rooting for you, buddy. All right. That's it for today, guys. This is a great episode. I'm really happy that we're just doing this one-on-one. It's been a while since I feel like I've properly done an episode without doing like a live or also doing a voicemail. So it's been great. I am so happy for the summer to start, guys. I'm going to be so salt life. It's going to be disgusting how salt this life's about to get. But I hope everybody is having a great start to their summer. And you know, keep a lot of love and light in your hearts for yourself, but more importantly for the Knicks and the Mexican sailors. I'll leave you with that. Guys, this is episode 19 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. I love you. I'll talk to you later. Peace. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.